breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Hump Day Edition. Yes, I still say that term, Hump Day Edition, middle of the week. On our way to the weekend, which I'm looking forward to. The weather's supposed to be fantastic here in southeastern Wisconsin. Hoping it will be wonderful and exciting for you as you advance through this week. Lots to talk about today. We have a shortened show because of an early Brewers game. But before we ever get to that, coming up at 9:35, the governor of the state of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, will join us on a big day in Wisconsin as they get set to vote on that special legislation that could, my words, bail out Milwaukee, save them from financial ruin. And I know there's a lot of upset people in Milwaukee because they didn't get what they wanted. It's the, I think, could be the start of an amazing chapter in Wisconsin politics. And again, this is rose-colored glasses, positivity gone wild, maybe even some naivete. That sounds better. Or delusion, you might even say, that we can actually get along as opposing parties, Democrats and Republicans, not slighting independents. You're part of that mix as well. But I am optimistic on this day because we are seeing some traction for common sense and logic. Nobody wins all the time. Before I get to that, though, not that I like this kind of stuff, but I love one of the things I do that other shows don't do, here or elsewhere. I can tell you that there's people that don't like me. And I'm curious about that. I'm fascinated by that. Why that is? This text came in. Of course, this week I've been joining the morning show. Vince gone off this week. Although he's still doing some fun stuff in the community, so he didn't go anywhere. So I've been sitting with Eric Bilstead, Greg Hill, of course, producing from the 262. I've never texted or called before. However, I must say that I am so turned off that Scafidi is invited to be a guest on the morning show. He is so opinionated and pushy with his viewpoints. Please keep him on his own time slots. I enjoy all the early show and am tempted to turn it off when Steve is on for any length of time. He is so full of himself. Yuck. I respect your opinion. I will carefully consider your opinion and contemplate some changes to my delivery, my style, the entire way I approach the business because of your input and your feedback. So thanks for that. Thanks for setting the tone for the day, really, because that was the first text I got. And I said to the texter, I'll pass that on, which I just did, to Eric and Greg Hill. Charlie, what do you think about a text like that? Right out of the gate, first text.
Well, you say, I'll pass that on. That's what I say to every caller.
There you go. That's kind of your job, right? Yeah, that's one of your sole responsibilities. So thanks for that. It's not, here's the lesson in that. It's not about seashells and balloons, everybody loving you. That's not the reality of the world we live in, whether it's someone who does what I do or you. Every idea that you think of that comes into your head is not the best idea ever, although some people think it might be. Every action that you make or take is not probably the best decision you could have ever made, but we learn from those mistakes, hopefully, and we become a better person at the end of the process. All right, we got that out there. So I mentioned this with Eric at the end of the 8 o'clock hour. There's some reporting out there. I saw it on, I think, a tweet from Wisconsin Right Now, or one of those posters to talk about politics and our culture. And if it's not that one, somebody will correct me. Now, if the numbers are correct, and I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty details, but it sounds like at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the state school, largest state school in our university system, double the size, more than double the size of University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, of which I am a grad. 1983, if you want to look it up. More than half of their students aren't from Wisconsin. More than half. I think it was like 54%, somewhere around there. I don't know if it bothers me per se, but it does beg the question. If we're so interested in keeping our talent here, keeping our kids here, keeping our students, our young adults, keeping anybody in the state of Wisconsin to grow our base, to grow our states, to keep some of the genius, and let's be honest, there's a lot of genius at UW-Madison, a lot of smart people. Kind of the reason for it, a university, right? Make us smarter. Isn't it somewhat important to make sure that some of that educational talent is from Wisconsin? Now, I know we have an agreement with the state of Minnesota, and there's a lot of back and forth. To be honest, I don't even know why that's a thing anymore. Is there some magic between Minnesota and Wisconsin? I would argue that the two states approach things very differently. I'm not a tremendous fan of the state of Minnesota. But don't you think if we're really, truly invested in keeping people in Wisconsin, post-graduation, the future business creators, the smartest, the best, and the brightest, that we would want to at least make sure that half of that number, which at any given year is probably, what, 10,000 plus graduates, are vested in the state of Wisconsin? Now, there's no guarantees, of course. You can be from here, graduate from UW-Madison, and then go somewhere else. I graduated from UWM and went to San Francisco to work. So there's no guarantees. But I'm here because I love the states, and I want to see the best for the state. And if I hear one more time, we can't hold on to our talent, and I see numbers that suggest UW-Madison is a bunch of people who don't even originate from the state of Wisconsin, that throws up some red flags for me. 855-616-1620. Your thoughts. Should we at least have a 50-50 break on that? Or perhaps a slight margin that says if you're from Wisconsin, you do get a head start. You do get a leg up on admission to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. There's a lot of things going on with universities now. But who's going? I don't know. It's been talked about that much. Maybe, just maybe, one of the keys to keeping people in the state of Wisconsin or making them stay here post-graduation is if you're invested in the university that you went to. Should UW-Madison have more in-state students than out-of-state students? Sounds like the numbers are a little, I don't want to say sketchy, but less than significant when it comes to our in-state students. Looks like it's about 54% come from out-of-state. And I'm just questioning why that is. Now, a lot of texters have a lot of wisdom, and that's not just on this topic. It's a lot of topics. 262, maybe just a lot of kids want to go to on the road and enjoy life in another state for 4 years. There's always going to be that. And I don't begrudge those kids because, you know, I'm a big fan of travel and learning and experiencing things outside of where you grew up, and that is a good thing. I'm just surprised that if we're truly making an effort in this state to retain our best and brightest young future superstars and CEOs and business leaders, that maybe this wouldn't be something we should at least ask about. From the 262, this is on purpose. They can charge more. They've been trying to up their tuition, but because of state caps, they are unable to do so. Unfortunately, they try the hardest. Now, that may be a real-life answer to the question, right, because their tuition has been capped. I hope that's not the case, because, again, there's implications to decisions that you make. Financially, yes, it might make sense short-term, but the implication, when we're talking about the economics of the states, the vitality of the state, the ability to grow the population, which if you interview any elected official, and I've interviewed probably more than most, is one thing they say, then this should be something we think about. Don starts the conversation from Manitowoc. Hey, Don.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
I'm good. Good.
Hey,
what do you think?
I'm going to tell you something. Here's a fact. I have two sons that left the state. They're both, one of them makes six figures in Denver. People are leaving because of the laws in Wisconsin.
How so, Don?
Criminals.
How so?
Because of legal cannabis, medical cannabis. I'm a stroke patient. I'm ready to sell my home and move to somewhere where I'm legal. My son will not move back here. He said he'd rather be homeless than move back to Wisconsin.
Interesting.
They're leaving. All your smart people, all your college kids, they don't want to be here. They don't want to go to jail.
Interesting. Thanks for the call, Don. I hadn't thought about that, to be honest. Is legal marijuana, recreational marijuana, He's talking about medicinal there for his own use. Is that big a deal? I mean, I can be honest as to this issue. Whenever we talk about marijuana, it is a instant light up the phones topic almost every time. I'm not sure that that's, and it might be in some small sense part of the issue, but specifically to education, here's why I think this matters. And we can all disagree on this. And I have a lot of different viewpoints on the text line, and I'll read some of those after I say this. When you have problems, and I think this is a problem, of retaining talents in a state, holding on to the best and brightest, encouraging people to go to a state school, a very good school, great school, UW-Madison. Part of that process, I think, should be to allow as many students from our own state to go there, to experience the Madison experience, all that goes with it, the great education, great quality of life, fun for a student. You got all the sports angle and the recreational opportunities in and around that area. Just from a retention standpoint, and a lot of this is anecdotal, I would think it makes sense to home grow the talents. That is, educate them here, give them the Wisconsin experience post high school, and teach them that this is a great place to raise a family. This is a great place to start a business. This is a great place to use your brilliant education that you just paid a lot of money for in your home states. From the 262, I'm not sure if there's an admission policy in this or not, but foreign and out-of-state students pay a lot more tuition. Yeah, that's true. UW is a great asset, and we should do more to encourage and enable qualified students to go there. That's my point in all of this. I'm not saying I love the institution. I didn't go there, but I respect it. And a lot of people that I know did go there and had a terrific experience. And I will be an advocate for almost any Wisconsin school, whether it's Marquette. I'll have Mike Lovell and a guest on tomorrow's program at 10:35. And he's a frequent guest in the program. I went to UW-Milwaukee. Fantastic experience. Went back for grad school. Couldn't say a bad word about it. Loved everything about it. Graduated in 83, undergrad. From the 815, I would be curious how many Wisconsin kids are in the overall UW system. We are a unique state with 13 state schools, all of which have great programs and smart kids. UW-Madison is sometimes just too big. You're not going to get everybody. But I think there's value in, as I said, keeping that homegrown talents. Mike joins us on the phone. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Good. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd agree with you that, Wisconsin should do something to do that. When I was thinking about going to school, U of I obviously is a very good school, you know, Big Ten, just like Wisconsin. It didn't even come into my mind, really. I checked out Indiana and Iowa. Sorry, I didn't check out UW-Madison. But I think, though, that most people, when they get older, appreciate places where they grew up, Wisconsin being one of them. I mean, they can't see the forest for the trees as they're growing up, but I think when they get older, they'll come back.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. And I do agree with that. I lived in San Francisco, Florida, San Francisco, California, Florida, in the Clearwater area, Bel Air Beach to be specific, Chicago area in a number of places, Crystal Lake, Gurnee, and then came back to Wisconsin in early 90s. And I've been here since. It's a great state. Are there problems? Sure, every state has problems. No state is perfect, and just have to watch the nightly news to realize that's the case. A few more texts before we get to break here. From the 262, I'm a high school counselor, and one of the reasons some of our best and brightest don't go to UW-Madison is because they don't reward kids as much as out-of-state school. For example, National Merit Scholars get more money by going to the University of Minnesota in scholarships than they do going to UW-Madison. So often they will choose that school over Madison. And I'm not doubting that for whatsoever. Let's fix that. This weird relationship between the University of Minnesota and Wisconsin, I've never understood. Yeah, we share a border, but there's no love lost between the two states. Not that we should hate them, other than the Vikings. I'm being facetious. I don't get it. And again, it's a simple point, but I think it's one that has to be made over and over again. We have a problem retaining our own people, retaining talents. And on top of that, we're not recruiting people to come to the states at the rate a growing state should. So those are all issues. From the 262, I graduated from Madison. My son graduated at the top of his class. Many volunteer hours, extracurricular activities, did not get into Madison along with many of his friends. He was disappointed, and so were we. I think Madison does not want the Wisconsin kids. You know, I hope that's not the case, because that would be sad. Only reason I brought this up, there's no hate for UW-Madison. I have a lot of friends that work there. I have a lot of friends and family who graduated from there. There's no hate here. All I'm saying is, like a lot of issues, we have to think about all the impacts that all these various decisions that are made, conscious decisions, in this case by the University of Wisconsin-Madison, on something as simple as who gets in and who doesn't. Maybe, just maybe, focusing on our own kids, our own young adults, and making that a priority in who gets in and who doesn't. Might be one of those incremental things we do to flip the switch on making the state not a flat or status quo state, but a growing state. More smart people, more future business leaders, and more people moving the state to raise their families. Had some fun with the show, Paul, if you don't understand what I'm talking about every day on the days of my show, Monday through Friday, 9 to noon here on WTMJ. I ask a question, and it could be political, and today was pure politics. The two leading candidates for the 2024 presidential election are both over 77 years old. And by the way, happy birthday, Donald Trump. Today's his birthday. One is also facing indictments that could derail his nomination for his party. Given all that, and again, you don't have a lot of information to go on because there's so many things can happen between you now and November of 2024. Who will be the next president? And I just gave you the obvious, right? Joe Biden, Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, and other. I'll just give you a quick look at this, and this is not good news for Donald Trump, but it's just a show poll, so take it for what it's worth. Joe Biden, 57%. Donald Trump, 9%. Ron DeSantis, 16%. And it's kind of an interesting look at the mood of the country on the others. Katie says, who even knows anymore? It's kind of soon for me to have a feeling towards this yet. There's a good chance that it will be wrong. Yeah, of course. We could be completely shocked. Could be not Biden or Trump. As wild as that may seem a year plus out, who knows, really? Cinders says, there must be someone out there. I'd vote for Biden. Since last week, we've been talking about the deal, shared revenue bill. It's going to be voted on today in the state capitol, hopefully. And we've had local leader, Mayor Cavalier Johnson from Milwaukee. We talked to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And right now, we're going to talk to the governor of the great state of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, who joins us on the phone. Good morning, Governor.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing today?
I am wonderful on this Wednesday. I'm going to ask you this right out of the gate. Are you surprised at all that we got a deal on this?
Yes and no.
Okay.
How about that for an answer?
Walk me through that.
First, the no part is that I sensed after the last election that there seemed to be more willingness to have conversations. And so, and from that, that's how we've got to where we're at. So I felt that there was more willingness to have conversations. So that opened it up to actually figuring out how to solve some really thorny problems.
When I talked to Mayor Johnson, I think it was last Friday, he was very confident he had the votes in his council. Are you as confident that that will happen as he is?
Well, I'm confident because a lot of people are actually on the council, from what I hear, is they're working hard to kind of get to yes. And so, yeah, I'm confident. I mean, There's a fair bit on the line here, like the fiscal stability of the city of Milwaukee and the county of Milwaukee. So I think at the end of the day, they will get a majority vote.
You mentioned in your opening remarks that there is a, I use the term thawing. We can debate whether that's the right term or not, but there's a willingness to have a conversation across political lines on this issue. Do you see this in renewed spirit of bipartisanship, if that's what this is, carrying into other things going forward with the legislature?
Well, I believe so. And you know, to be truthful, I've signed many, many, many more bills than I have vetoed over my time as governor. So I think some of the iciness that people may have viewed really was somewhat of a mirage. We passed lots of bipartisan bills, and they far, far more than me having to veto things. But that said, I do believe there's some opportunities here, and hopefully we'll continue that in the future.
Governor Tony Evers joining us on WTMJ. You and I both know, and you know, you've been in politics long enough to know that the two sides have often have very different ideas on education, on crime, and how we solve some of those issues, how we share revenue in the state, and this is the big decision today.
Yeah.
What do you say to your fellow Democrats who say, you gave in to what the Republican-led legislature wanted you to do? How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, $1 billion in public education funding, for example, and also, frankly, saving the city of Milwaukee and the county of Milwaukee from defaulting on all sorts of financial issues. And clearly, Democrats want Milwaukee and Milwaukee County to succeed as much as Republicans do. So I think we've made good progress. Like I said, $1 billion is a lot of money. And it's just, frankly, just doing the right thing for Wisconsin. There will be some people that do not vote support this that are Democrats, but at the end of the day, it's the right thing.
Governor Tony Evers joining us on WTMJ. I've spent a lot of time over the last few years talking about the need to, even in the area of divided government, to get things done. I think this is an example of getting things done. I can tell you, I've talked to a lot of local leaders over the last week, and they are thrilled that there's been this spirit of cooperation. Still work to be done. Obviously, the bill has to be voted on, but they like the fact that at least at this moment, a governor was a Democrat and a legislature led by Republicans, both the Senate, state Senate and the assembly in Wisconsin, have recognized there was a problem for local governments. I think it's a big deal.
Yeah. And I do too. I mean, I spent probably 60-70% of my time when I was running for re-election talking about shared revenue, and people's eyes started to glass over, but I still kept talking about it, and Republicans have too. So we've met the issue square on, and each side gave up on some things that are important to them, and that's how compromise is made, and people have to understand that this is really, really important for the city and the county, but it's also really important for our kids in the state and mental health and a lot of other things that are exceedingly important.
One of the issues that often comes up on shows like mine and on the text line, which is where we get a lot of our audience feedback, and on the phone lines, is the subject of crime in the state, not just with the Milwaukee area where I am at, but all over, and the ways that we deal with this. If I were to ask you this sort of a general question, what is your answer to the folks that say we've got to do something different when it comes to when people commit crimes, their ability in some cases to just get right back out there and recommit? How do you answer that question?
Well, certainly, yes, everybody is concerned about it. And, you know, I can talk for a long time about, you know, having some more reasonable gun control issues and gun safety issues. And that, you know, that includes the red flag laws and universal background checks and so on. But it extends to just the ability of us to make sure that we have enough police officers and others on the job, and that is something that shared revenue will help in. But we also have, you know, it is a multi answer here, Steve, and you know, it has to do with transit. It has to do with affordable housing. It has to do with people being hungry. It has to do with making sure that people are taking, and this is another shared revenue thing, when they are arrested, that there's some speediness to the solution to instead of having people waiting for a trial for months and months and months because there's not enough people to do that. There's all sorts of things we can do, from simply fixing the roads and making it more difficult for people to speed, to making sure that people can get into the system and have their day in court as soon as possible.
One of the other hot-button issues related to this is the subject of school resource officers. I'm a huge supporter of this. We had them in Oak Creek when I was the mayor there. It was a program that I thought worked well. Obviously, post-George Floyd, some communities like Milwaukee and other big cities across the country said, we don't like that idea, and they pulled back on it. I think some of those cities like Denver have said, you know, hold on a second, we're going to put that back in. We know that in this proposal, there's, I think, 25 or 26 positions. I think Republicans were asking for 150 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Are you supportive of the school resource officer position or not?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I just want, you know, my personal opinion is I'm fine with it. But I also believe that school boards are in the best position to make those decisions. So forcing it on a school is school board is something that I don't feel very comfortable about. But at the end of the day, those 25 people will be serving the kids in the Milwaukee public schools. And I accept that. But I do believe that school boards should have the final say on that. That's not the case. That's one of the things that I felt strongly about. But I agreed to do that for the greater good of having the city of Milwaukee and the county of Milwaukee not to go into bankruptcy.
Last thing, shared revenue bill up for vote today. Hopefully, do you think there'll be any surprises?
Oh, never say never. But I think there's been enough talk on this issue that we should be able to move on to the University of Wisconsin system and some other important topics. But it's a win. It's a win for Wisconsin. It was the right thing to do. Everybody gave some, and that's the way it's supposed to work in a divided government.
Governor Tony Evers, always appreciate your time. I look forward to interviewing you at the Wisconsin State Fair coming up in August.
Can't wait. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, Governor.
Yep. Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.
Governor Tony Evers joining us live on 620 WTMJ. Thoughts about what he said or didn't say? 855-616-1620. Thanks for tuning in on this Wednesday. Happy hump day, everybody. Happy Flag Day. And I made a big point of talking about this on Memorial Day when I worked with Carol. That we don't have a lot of expectations in this country. And I think one of those expectations should be that on days like this, we fly the flag. 4th of July, Memorial Day, Veterans Day, Labor Day, and probably a countless other days. And to be honest, if you have the ability and the means, fly it every day under the right protocols and the right manner. But it signifies something beyond just this arbitrary thing of flying a flag. It signifies that you're vested in whatever it is we're trying to do in this great country. And I think that's important. So I was thinking about this when I hung up with the governor there. The reason this is significant, and I think people are missing this, because, you know, I always get he avoided that question. I can only answer the questions. I can't answer the questions for the governor. And I think both Republicans and Democrats are going to have to figure out the crime issue in ways that they've never thought about it before, because that's clearly on people's minds. I see it every time I have an elected official on. Has to be sorted out. I would argue tougher penalties in some case, higher standards when it comes to letting people back out are common sense things. But don't lose the headline here. Wisconsin got local leaders of both political flavors, Democrats and Republicans, and independents, they got the heavy Republican majorities in the legislature, Assembly and Senate, and a Democratic governor who's arguably pretty liberal to agree on a deal that has wins and losses for both sides. And I chastised the Milwaukee Common Council yesterday on this issue. This idea that this is a racist proposal or a racist bill is frankly and misusing the term racist and embarrassing for you. You have decided, those who may vote against this, to cast school resource officers as racist or unnecessary, when the vast majority of people, including our own governor, you just heard it from him, support the idea. And when school boards make bad decisions, that is a moment when governors, legislatures should step in. Because, you know, here's a breaking news flash for you. School boards aren't perfect either. They do a lot of dumb things. And that correction, that normalizing of bad decisions, I think has ruined, in some cases, our ability to control discipline and control positive outcomes in schools. And I've argued with school board members about this, many who disagree. I hear you, but I disagree. And to get this win for both sides, more money, significant more money for public education, which is valued, at least in my mind, by a lot of people in the state, and for those individuals who support voucher schools, choice schools, that's hard to do. So instead of picking this apart and trying to demonize, which is frankly boring, Republicans as evil or Democrats as evil or whatever passes for talk radio nowadays, is shallow, unintellectual, and lazy. And I realize I just hurt a lot of feelings. Don't care. This is a win for the state. This is a win for local governments who've been asking for this for about 11 years. Don't get stuck in the weeds on this. It's a good day in Wisconsin. If they get the work done and if the Common Council of Milwaukee and the school board do what they should do. And if they don't, good luck. You're on your own. Busy hour. We're just getting started on this shortened show. We've got an early Brewers game today, so we'll get out here about 11:35. Hand it off to the folks at American Family Field. They are home, right? They are home, yeah. Yeah, they're home. I got this text. I just wanted to highlight it from Diane. And I think it kind of speaks to some of the truths that are out there that I think we sometimes forget. I don't know why, this is from Diane, I don't know why constituents have to tell our adult leaders that compromise is how we get governing done. It's their job. I'm happy this is happening, but man, the fact that we have to say it is unreal. Because that's where politics has devolved to. And I'm not going to make a speech because I only have a minute, but, and you probably know what's coming. We've allowed, through talk radio and talking heads on TV, for politics to get dumbed down so it's us versus them, they're idiots, we're geniuses, pick a side, whatever side you're on, the other side's an idiot. We've allowed that to become the norm. And those voices you used to hear on the radio and then on network TV have now moved to the elected offices in the House and in the Senate and sometimes in the office of president. And all that noise, as I've said over and over again, is not work. The work is getting bills passed and signed by either the governor or the president that actually improve our quality of life, our way of life, the economy, our border policy, our international relations. Pick a subject. That's work. That's what's important.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to the Wednesday show. I am Steve, according to the Big Voice Guy, and that is correct. I am confirming his announcement on this Wednesday. From the Avenue Studios here in downtown Milwaukee, start of hopefully a weather turn to the better, because we've had some rain, which was, trust me, much appreciated for those of us who grow things. The garden said thank you. The flowers said thank you. The vegetables certainly echoing that. I'm going to come back to what I think is obviously the big story, and we're going to talk about this in a lot of different ways this week. Certainly with Bill McCutcheon, Republican strategist, and Joe Zepecki, Democratic strategist, on our Friday 9 o'clock hour. But the conversation about Donald Trump evolved a little bit last night. And I hadn't necessarily thought about it in this way. So a couple easy questions I'll throw out there before I kind of get warmed up here on this. On the Old National Bank talking text line 855-616-1620. And don't read more into it than the word indicates. And the easy one for me is, what should Republican voters do with the Trump problem? Question mark. And as I was watching a lot of coverage last night, because whether you love Trump or hate Trump, yesterday was a historic day. That criminal indictment or indictments never happened before. There was a possibility in the Nixon-Agnew days, but we all know what happened there. Which brings me to sort of confirming what I heard last night from several commentators on several networks. This election is really about not policy. This is the last great, desperate attempt by the former president, Donald Trump, to save his you-know-what. And we can talk long about whether a president could actually pardon himself and the legal ramifications of all that. But set that aside. We don't know, and hopefully we don't have to find out. A lot of the talking heads, the experts, the political experts, and they define that, I don't, said that what this is the president realizing on many fronts, civil, criminal, beginning with the Miami hearing yesterday, a Raymond hearing, eventually shifting to Georgia, Fulton County, election interference, back to the DOJ, election interference, January 6th, what the president did or didn't do or knew and didn't know, what kind of communication was going backward and forward on that day, January 6th, 2021. And a realization by former President Donald Trump that the only way he's getting out of this is if he wins the election for president and can pardon himself. And I will tell you, I was watching some of the Republican, I'm more interested in what Republican commentators say about this than, or conservative commentators say than Democrats. Most Democrats cannot stand Donald Trump. And I've talked about, and you're not hearing this anywhere else, the erosion of confidence, not from voters. There's a strong core of people who love Donald Trump. That's not going to change. The erosion of support from Republican senators, a few Republican congressmen and women, not a lot, but a few, and business leaders, donors, and commentators that suggest, conservative commentators, that there's something different about all this. The feel of it is different. The growing sense that this is not going to happen for them. Now, I asked this in my show poll today. And if you're not on the twit, you can certainly join us at 855-616-1620, the Old National Bank talking text line. And it's really simple to me. Who do you think is going to be the next president? Donald Trump is chasing this, I think, so that he has at least the ability to get himself out of this mess with a self-pardon. And I gave the obvious choices. And if you're not on Twitter, you can certainly weigh in on the Old National Bank talking text line. Joe Biden, Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis. If I were to tell you right now, who do you think is winning in this poll? It's not even close. Joe Biden, 57%. Trump, less than 10%. Ron DeSantis, 16%. Now, this is not scientific. There's no margin of error on a unscientific poll. But I do think it's indicative of what we're talking about. So for all of you out there in radio land, what should Republican voters do with the Trump problem? Somebody that can win the nomination, but more likely than not, cannot even come close to winning the general election for president, therefore would be facing multiple indictments across multiple states, Florida, Georgia, New York, whose only hope would be to win the presidency and self-pardon himself. That's a tough one. It's a tough dilemma because as a Republican voter, I want a choice that's realistic to beat Joe Biden. I'm not a Trump supporter, and I don't want that to be my choice. And I'm talking to more and more people who say the exact same thing. Give us a choice that's reasonable. So that's the question. What should Republicans do with the Trump problem? You can define problem any way you want to. I just kind of laid out what the issue is. Criminal charges across multiple states, multiple fronts, and a variety of issues, all sort of related to the same thing. Behavior and conduct of both a president and a former president. The time has finally arrived, Milwaukee. Summerfest time, that is. I forgot to do this yesterday. So two chances to win today. So one now, one in the early part of the 11 o'clock hour. Summerfest weeks away. Next week? World's largest music festival. World's greatest music festival, in my opinion. Plenty of moments to brag about. Plenty of fun to be had. Caller number six. Caller number six to 855-616-1620. Caller number six will win a four-pack of tickets. All the great food, all the great drink, shopping. Children's area, concerts, free and otherwise, and our great Wisconsin weather all on full display at Summerfest. Good luck to caller number six. We'll do another one, as I said, early part of the 11 o'clock hour. All right. Question is this. I laid it out there. What I think's going on here. This is a move to win the presidency, not to advance policy, but to save one's own you-know-what. Matt joins us from Oshkosh, the great city of Oshkosh. Hey, Matt.
How you doing, Steve?
I am wonderful on this Wednesday. How are you?
Wonderful. Hey, so I am a lifelong Democrat. I voted for one Republican in my life, the great Tommy Thompson. I will commit and pledge to vote for Pence if you guys can just get him on the ticket.
You know, there are probably a lot of people that think like you think on that issue, which doesn't surprise me.
To be honest, we're kind of stuck. You know, you talked about how, you know, Republicans are stuck and just want a good choice. And as Democrats, we feel like we have to kind of carry the burden this election and vote for somebody that we kind of think that should just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, there's no one really out there that anybody can really agree on. But I think a lot of my Democratic friends and liberals understand what Pence did for us as a country, that let's give him one here and let's just start all over.
Interesting.
For once and all, get rid of Trump and get rid of Biden and kind of let's go to Pence and kind of just move on.
Interesting thought. Thanks for the call, Matt, calling from Oshkosh. Yeah. I can't tell you how many people, including elected officials, local, state, and federal, have said to me, just give us somebody that we can respectfully vote for, not have to feel bad about it, not have to argue about it, just somebody we like, we want to vote for. You know, I've said this before. Give me a Paul Ryan. Well, he's not running. Give me a Paul Ryan light. Someone who's Paul Ryan-esque, who's thoughtful, considerate, smart, doesn't go around every day trying to offend somebody. That's what I'm looking for. And whether or not you're, you know, Mike's a Democrat, lifelong Democrat, voted for Tommy Thompson, easy vote. Tommy Thompson, great governor, state of Wisconsin. Who, by the way, for all those folks who don't agree with getting along with the other side, demonstrated it was not easy, but possible. Let's see. From the old National Bank talk, lots of texts. And you can join on the phone as previous caller just did. From the 262. I was saddened that yesterday I heard a popular Trump-supporting radio voice elsewhere spreading the untruth to Republican voters that the feds didn't know that Trump had any secret documents and just decided to raid his house to see what they could find. No option to return them on his own. Outrageous misinformation to lackey listeners. Thanks for being accurate in your reporting on WTMJ. You're welcome. It should be easy for everybody. My frustration, and again, this is not breaking news because I've talked about it before, is how much misinformation comes from talking heads, people that do what I do. It's lazy. It's politically self-serving. I get it. I get why it happens. And some of it's very profitable. A lot of money to be made in that area. The Ben Shapiros of the world and the like, locally and nationally. A lot of money to be made there. I would argue that cheerleading for anything is sort of a waste of time, but, you know, you do you. Texas, all it proves is that you have liberal listeners. I can tell you right now, my audience is pretty diverse. Independents, conservatives, liberals. And here's the dirty little secret. I like that. It's not a bad thing. There are plenty of places you can go where you can cheerlead for whatever you think is the cause celeb that day. Not interested. That's why I have guests from both sides. That's why I have callers from both sides. That's why I read texts that both criticize and praise. That's real life. Let's see. 262. Heard someone say that if Trump is elected, he will spend his term getting revenge. Yeah, that's the other thing. It's the revenge tour. Would be great, going on with the text, would be great if Republicans would start to focus on policy instead of Trump. It would go a long way to help. No one has the nerve to do that. That nerve question is interesting to me. As we debate all this, the world, according to Trump, who's got the guts? I'll go one step further. Who has the guts to stand up to this guy? Now, I've stood next to Donald Trump long time ago. Whistling Straits, practice green, standing right next to me. He's an imposing figure. He's a big guy. But that's not enough. There's plenty of big guys that are not scary. And for the life of me, well, I guess I kind of know the answer. For the life of me, the desire to please one person, when it flies in the face of fixing things, dealing with each other as human beings, doing the right thing, whatever that right thing is, with a consensus of opinions, not one opinion. I don't know why that's so hard for people. And as I indicated earlier, there is a growing shift to some more thoughtful thinking, and I noticed it right away with the Republican senators returning to Washington, D.C. The word serious was used for the first time when they were talking about the most current slate of indictments directed towards the former president. It suggests they are taking this seriously, as the president, former president, should. Again, I agree. I read the ones that disagree. It's a witch hunt that you became a part of. The whole thing is BS. Shake my head. I understand there's a group of people who believe that. And I respect your opinion because I read it. I don't agree with your opinion, but it's an opinion. Now, I will give you this. Were there people that jumped on Trump unfairly? Sure. He's an easy target for that. And the media is overly sensitive anyway, and networks like CNN fed into that, and MSNBC. Did they go too far? Sure. But ultimately, one's conduct dictates much of that. Don't make yourself an easy target, and people aren't going to pick on you. Cheney should run, Liz Cheney from the 760. I respect Liz Cheney. I respect what she did, and I respect what she says. She's brave enough to do it. 815, Glenn Youngkin perfectly describes the candidate you and I are both looking for, but he's not currently running, but I think he may get in the race eventually. Yeah. Another one of those names that is out there. From the 414, this is delusional. Pence carried Trump's water for 4 years, and you want to make him president because he wasn't willing to commit treason for him. Lowered expectations is how we got Trump. It's one person's opinion. Caller said he liked Mike Pence, and he was a Democrat that said that. Respect the opinion. You don't have to agree with it. 262, as a Democratic voter primarily, I would be happy with a Chris Christie, Mike Pence, or Nikki Haley. Look, I wrote in Nikki Haley twice. So I understand that process. I also understand why I did that, because I wasn't going to vote for Donald Trump as a Republican, but I still wanted to cast my vote for a Republican. That was important to me. And I think, well, we might, if Trump is a nominee, see a lot more of that, which also doesn't bode well for the former president. Interesting times politically. This is, my opinion, that moment of shifting in American politics. It won't happen today, probably won't happen tomorrow, but in the future, near to long term, the rise of a third party, a legitimate third party, an increase, and I almost feel crazy for saying this, an increase in the likelihood that we'll go from very partisan to bipartisan at some point in the next 10 years. have the feeling, could be completely wrong. I hope I'm right. And you should too. It's interesting whenever I talk about this issue, and save the Trump bashing texts. Look, I'm honest about the president. I didn't support him. I also, when he did something I liked, I talked about it. I love the 2017 tax cut, and I've said that since it happened. I appreciate a conservative court. Said that when it happened. That's not news, breaking news, whatever. But there's an interesting thing that happens when I talk about the future when it comes to politics. And we have, obviously, a Wisconsin bias because that's where we are. And it's the Paul Ryan question. And I get this a lot, and somebody just sent this in. Where is Paul Ryan? Mike from Heartland on the old National Bank talk and text line, 855-616-1620. He's not going anywhere. He's a young guy. Of all the Republicans I know out there, he's the one I most closely align with. He's smart. He's got guts. He's served when asked, including as Speaker of the House. He's a Wisconsin guy. Good family man, man of faith, who I think respects the position. Ran as vice president with Mitt Romney. Didn't get there, but appreciated that. And I'll tell you the quick story because I only have 30 seconds. When we had the shooting in Oak Creek, he came to our vigil, and I asked him, I've told the story before, do you want to speak? And he goes, I'm not here for that. I'm here to support. At that moment, I realized the kind of person that Paul Ryan was, then Speaker, Congressman. It wasn't about him. And maybe the answer for us in politics, for what ails us, is let's start electing people that it's not about them. It's not about their story. It's not about their personality. It's about the work that they actually do. That's what I like about Paul Ryan. So thanks for reminding me of that when you sent that text in. Thanks for tuning in on this Wednesday. It's 10:36 here in WTMJ from our Avenue Studios in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. He's been here before, Chris Reeder, Executive Vice President at the Institute for Reform and Government. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me back.
So I had the governor on the show earlier. We didn't get to taxation, but we're going to spend some time on that. And I just want to get your thoughts on the budget process, where we're going to spend our money, what will get through the legislature, where will the governor go on that, will he approve or veto. Just some general thoughts on where that's going, that conversation's going, after today's big decision, which is, of course, on the shared revenue deal.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the budget, you know, this is the hot time of the budget cycle every 2 years. This week and next week are when all the sausage is really being made in Madison. A lot of spending is on the table right now. In the Joint Finance Committee, they approved the transportation budget, $1.5 billion last night. They're approving the education budget. We're hoping that up next soon is the tax reform portion of that budget, where we actually talk about how much should we be taking from the people of Wisconsin, not just how much should we be spending.
And we'll get into the specifics of that in a second. But just where do you think this budget process is going to go, and what will the governor like and not like?
Yeah, I mean, they are, it seems, trying pretty hard, at least on the key issues, to actually come to consensus with him ahead of time. So on the key issues, there will be less of an appetite, I think, for big vetoes when you're talking about issues like the school funding bill. Right. Although we saw some of his allies came out strongly opposed to the education package that he had agreed to yesterday with the teachers union in Milwaukee and statewide opposing that.
To his credit, he said they were wrong.
He did. So it's, you know, the parties are coming together. They seem to be compromising. You know, the one area that there hasn't been much public discussion on yet and where that's going is on tax reform. But the budget generally, all sides are pretty far apart up until maybe a few days ago. It seems to be coalescing now. They should be coming together. The big question is, what does that mean for taxpayers and spending, though? Is it going to be a budget that, spends anywhere near what the governor wanted? Hopefully not. He wanted $106 billion, which was a giant growth upon last year's budget. Expect a budget that will be, you know, somewhere lower than that, somewhere more in line with inflation, hopefully. But, you know, the final numbers will all come together in the next week or so, week of business days.
One of the questions I get a lot is, we have this surplus, upwards of $7 billion. As part of this budget, Are we getting, are we going to get into this money? Are the taxpayers themselves going to get a check or a credit or something back on that overinvestment in their state government? Because that's what I call it. It's our money.
Right. That is what we are asking for at IRG. We are asking for that money to be recognized as the government has taken too much from the people of Wisconsin, from families, from individuals, from businesses. And it should be returned. It should be returned in a way that is not just cutting a $200 check back, but we don't really change the mechanism behind it. We'd like to change the mechanism behind it so that 2 years from now, we're not building that surplus up once again. The government in our estimation should take in what they need, not more. They should not be building a surplus of billions and billions. So,
am I wrong in saying that when they do that, it gives them an opportunity to spend more? And I don't like that. I just think it provides an easy way to do that.
It makes it really easy for all the special interests in Madison to line up at the governor's door, to go to the lawmakers and say, "Hey, you've got $7 billion here. What's $100 million here or $100 million there?" It makes it real easy to make those asks. We think it should be, we should spend that money down by giving it back to the people, not by spending it on new programs and expansion of government. And then we should fix that process going forward so we don't, again, build that surplus back up.
I want to get into tax policy. I'm going to ask a question before the break, and then we'll dig a little bit deeper after. I am fascinated, and you and I talked about this last time we were here, of the idea that we would be a no state income tax state. And the allure, to be honest, both ways, of being a state that can say that. And what's the numbers now? How many states is it?
Yeah, there
around
10? There are 9 states right now.
Yeah. I think there's magic in that. And I think doing that, making that decision, could do a lot to alleviate some of the things that we're going to talk about after the break, which is keeping people here and getting people to come here. On that issue, is it a real possibility, and I'm asking this seriously, that we could have at some point a state like Wisconsin have no state income tax in the near future?
Right. I think it's not only a possibility. Of course, define what you mean by near. If I look at this,
a couple years.
Four or five year cycle. It's possible on paper. The question is it possible politically? We put out a report, a plan to do just that. Iowa is doing it. It's certainly possible. It's plausible. It should be on the table for all sides. Hopefully we can get it done.
All right, we're going to talk about tax policy, what will actually probably happen with our guest, Chris Reeder. Take a quick break here. You're listening, of course, to WTMJ. Happy Wednesday, everybody. We're talking tax policy. State of Wisconsin, our guest Chris Reeder, Executive Vice President, Institute for Reform and Government, in studio. All right, so we talked about taxation in Wisconsin. I'm a big fan of the eliminating of our state income tax. I'm asking this seriously because I think it's a serious question. And obviously, there's a lot of speculation involved in this. If we became, whatever that was, short-term, long-term, whatever it is, a state that had no state income tax and probably a more favorable tax policy in general, what is that an actual draw? Well, there's the weather thing, which we don't have, unless you love cold weather and freezing your butt off in January and February. Is it realistic to expect that, like, states like Texas or Florida or Nevada, which have that, what could we be that draw as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll probably level set. We'll probably never compete with Florida for retirees or that, but we certainly can compete with families who are here in the Midwest. We can certainly be the best in the Midwest. We can draw even more people from our border to the south, from Illinois. We can draw people from Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota has an income tax rate that's higher than ours now, so we are actually seeing a little bit of growth there. Iowa's trying to outdo all of us right now, so we need to stop that. But certainly we can be the best in the Midwest. We can be the best in the Big Ten, however you want to phrase that, and we can be in the ballgame nationally to draw people in. There are other cold weather states that have no income tax, and they're winning.
Give me an example.
You have, looking out in the mountain states, right? You have the South Dakota, you have Idaho with a flat tax, you have Wyoming without an income tax. So these are states where they have a lower tax rate, and you know, they're cold weather, so they're beating us on that front at least.
The obvious question is, okay, so how do you replace that revenue, that money that comes in?
Right. Well, a large chunk of it just happens organically through economics. As people as our economy is growing, as people are here, they're spending more, and that money is coming in through sales tax revenue. If that is not enough, and it probably would not be, then you take a look at the sales tax. You can increase that by a couple of points. It would still be lower than what people pay in Chicago. It would still be lower than what people pay in Florida, where people are moving to. So you could increase the sales tax by just a couple of points, completely eliminate the income tax in Wisconsin, and have our you know, state revenues be held harmless if that was your goal. Our goal would be to provide a tax cut as well, so we would actually want to make sure that the sales tax increase does not quite hold government harmless, but is more proactive for families. But it's still positive to draw people in.
And that argument makes a lot of sense, especially when you have $7 billion surpluses, because clearly you're taking in too much money. I love when the audience chimes in, and this comes from the old National Bank Talking Text Line. If they can't pass the no state income tax, what about not taxing retirees? I think there's some other places that do something on that level, but is that a realistic proposal?
It should be. You know, we would look at it, and our preference would be looking more at a tax cut that hits everybody. So more driving down brackets overall.
Right.
We take the four brackets and try to condense them to three, and then
something
to two.
Some of that happens naturally, but because they have a lower tax bracket.
Right.
So making less money.
Going at individual, you know, I am always of the mindset that reducing taxes is a good thing. So if what we can get done is only on retirees or is only on certain populations, I'm all for it. I want to see a broader tax cut, though, that hits across all spectrums. Ideally, that drives some of the top brackets down. Even just a small cut at the top bracket, currently 7.65, that's what hits small businesses. That's where, if you can drive that down even just to a little bit under 7%, that actually puts more money into the economy, helps hiring, helps increase wages. So the more that we can focus tax cuts at those brackets, it really does help kind of all the way across the economic spectrum.
All right. I know you're not an economist, but how is the state doing economy-wise? Are we status quo, or are we're not thriving? Where are we at?
We're not thriving, but we are in line nationally with where we would expect to be. We're looking at average growth, I would say, if I'm talking to our friends that are economists at the UW in Madison. We are expected average growth for the next couple of years. State revenue projections, even from the state's economists, are projected to go up from about $20 billion, which is what they collect from sales tax and from the income tax, to about $22 billion in a couple of years. So we're growing. We're still growing, even though slowly or slower than we would hope on the revenue side. But there are some warning signs if you look at our population. You know, our population is aging. Our population is leaving. A large number of folks are leaving every year largely to states that don't have an income tax or that have a flat tax. So there are warning signs on the horizon for if we don't turn things around to try to draw people in, we will not be growing even at average soon.
Your opinion and IRG's is that if we can impact our tax policies, if we could in some way become a no state income tax state, that would stop some of the migration and perhaps flip it.
Absolutely. You know, right now we have about 92,000. The latest data from the IRS, which was from 2021, so a couple years old, but it's the freshest they have, showed that about 92,000 people left the state. And as our researchers analyzed that, about 60% of that went to states with either a flat or a no income tax structure. So people are leaving. Maybe that's not the only reason why they're leaving, but they are leaving, and that's where they're choosing to go. So if we can flip that, and we can have those people coming in to start changing our demographics so we're not aging anymore. You know, right now we are one of only 14 states that has a population that is 40 years and older as a median age. And that's not a sustainable population demographic going forward, so we need to draw people in.
It seems simplistic, but the more people earning money, the more people creating businesses, the less all of us have to pay.
Right.
And it's as simple as that. Last thing for you, because this came from the text line as well, the old National Bank Talking text line, 855-616-1620. And again, it's speculation. Will we see from this surplus in our hands as taxpayers some form of a rebate, refund, credit, realistically in this budget?
Yep, there will be some form of a tax cut in this budget. We've heard that from legislative leaders. We've heard that publicly from the governor. They've all stated that as a goal. You know, they've done their other big picture, big bucket spending items to date. They've made those compromises, or they're finishing them up. This is the next one. So we do expect in the next few days to have a tax reform package come forward. You know, of course, elimination is the ideal. It's probably a stretch for this time around. The governor in his budget called for, you know, significant tax cuts, but they were primarily through credits, and we'd like to see that baked more into the actual rate structure. So, yes, we will see a tax cut. The question is how big and how bold, and, you know, that will be determined by how realistic do the governor and the legislative leaders take this data of tax revenue driving people into the state or not. If they believe that, and if they believe that we really do need to turn things around, then we'll see a larger tax cut, and it will have a focus more at kind of the top brackets to be a driver of the economy.
Yeah, and just to be completely honest, I'm more positive now than I was before the shared revenue deal, because clearly that winners and losers on deals like that suggest there's opportunities in other places. One of them might be how we tax in the state. Chris Reeder, Institute for Reform and Government, Executive Vice President, appreciate your wisdom, and I always appreciate you coming in.
Great. Thank you, Steve.
Absolutely. We'll take a break here. Lots more to get to. Don't forget, we have a shortened show today coming up after the top of the hour news. Ask Steve Anything. I love that segment because you get to direct the conversation where you want it to go. And that's always held right through the old National Bank talking text line 855-616-1620. Quick break on WTMJ. Yeah, one of the reasons I do that, and I've talked tax policy with Chris before, Chris Reeder from the Institute for Reform and Government, because it's on everybody's minds. I mean, and you know, I don't like the term dumbed down, but, and Chris is a very smart guy on tax policy, trust me. He knows of what he speaks. But here's the problem that I see. We're producing these surpluses, and as I asked Chris, it's really easy for leaders, legislative and governors, to spend our money. And when they see these big pots and pools of money, it's really, really easy. So a logical question for taxpayers, those of us who are paying into the system, right? Buying the goods, paying our taxes, property or otherwise, sales or otherwise. To want to know, are we getting some of that money back? And I know that it's being put in the context of a tax cut. But I'm not sure why rebate / refund / tax credit is off the table. We paid too much of our money. You don't need that money, clearly, because you have a surplus and you haven't spent it. When are we getting it back? And I can tell you, I probably got a dozen texts, and I'm getting more right now, because that's the issue for taxpayers. You took too much. How about a little something for the effort? How about a little something coming back? All right. After the top of the hour news, ask Steve Anything, any question, fair game, any topic, any subject, 855-616-1620. That is the old National Bank talking text line.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning. Welcome to 11 o'clock hour, shortened show. We got an early Brewers game, and I misspoke earlier. They're not at American Family Field. They're at Target Field in Minneapolis. So they're on the road, but they're starting early, so we'll have a shortened version of the show today, and then the rest of the schedule will play out as it plays out whenever we have a Brewers telecast here on WTMJ, the flagship of the Milwaukee Brewers. All right. Ask Steve Anything. Here's the rules. There are no rules. You can ask any question, any topic, any subject. As long as you don't swear, it gets on. Charlie's laughing at me. The old National Bank talking text line wide open. Not wide open, but there's some questions already. 855-616-1620. Let's go to the phones first. Kathy calling from the city of Waukesha. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
How are you?
Good morning. I enjoy this part of the week. I'm fine. I'm great.
Good, good.
So my question is, if Donald Trump called into your show right now, what is the first question you would ask him?
Ooh, do you want to hang up and listen for the answer?
Yes, I will.
Okay, hang up and listen for the answer. I'll wait for you. Kathy asks a great question. Thanks for calling, Kathy, and thanks for saying that you love this part of the show. I love this part of the show, too. Hello, Mr. President. I appreciate you taking the time to call in. I will tell you, before I ask the question, my first question today,
that I am a Republican and have voted that way most of my life, but I didn't vote for you in 2016 or 2020. I wrote in Nikki Haley. So my question is, given all the stories about you, you say unfair press treatment. Some people say you stretch the rules and are unpresidential. How do you answer the critics that say this next election is not about policy, but it's about saving your you-know-what? Because you are facing multiple indictments over many states. And that's a kind of a complex question, but I think that's kind of where you have to go, because there's no question in my mind that once I ask that question, to say question too many times in a short amount of time, he's going to talk for like 5 minutes. So I want to get it all in. And I want him to understand, as a baseline, this is where I'm coming from. Too often, this former president dictates the conversation. And that, in most conversations, most interviews, that's what happens, right? You ask the questions, you hope that they answer them, and they often don't. I've faced that for the 6.5 years I've done this show. It's a reality. We deal with it. Governors, former presidents, mayors, whatever it is, they kind of say what they want to say. I love the question because it suggests that we have a president who listens, or in this case, a former president. I'm not sure that's the case, Kathy. And I'm not sure that he is necessarily interested in my opinion on anything. And I'm not even sure that Donald Trump, former president, President 45, is interested in what his attorneys have to say. Because, case in point, even after the seriousness of that arraignment hearing in Miami, in a courthouse, he talked about things, confirmed things that were written into the actual indictments, that I have to believe any attorney worth his salt, let's use a more modern term, any attorney who's worthy of representing a former president would advise him not to say these things. Seems like a dangerous, dangerous thing to do. All right. How about a fun one? As I get my mouse working here. What's your favorite summer activity? For me, it's gardening. Well, two. Gardening and golf. Those two things I love. Now, I have another gardening question I'll get to in a second. This has been a challenging year because of the lack of precipitation that changed yesterday dramatically. I think we got about 3/4 of an inch. I have certainly supplemented that with, at one point when I first planted my plants, which are about 120 tomato plants of some different varieties, predominantly San Marzano, but also some heirlooms, Brandywine and others. And then, you know, the other stuff, zucchini and cucumbers and potatoes, which I think are easy to grow, but most people never attempt, which I don't understand. But so it's been challenging, but I love the fact that for an hour here, a couple hours here, I don't play the radio. I don't play music. It's just me outside. Occasional sound of a train going across and blowing their horn on a busy Oak Creek street. But that's it. And I love the freedom of that. And I love the fact that, you can grow things. Cause if anyone's done it, and I have a much larger garden than most people, it's just, it's an accomplishment. Should I read one that's critical? Well, if I'm going to be honest with myself, why don't you go work for CNN? My mornings would be better. You know, if CNN offers, would you turn down $1 million a year to host a show on CNN? I wouldn't. Can I do it from Oak Creek? Diane says this about our conversation about Trump. Trump will never answer any question you ask. He will just rant. Well, probably true, but it's still going to, you have to ask it, right? Steve, this one was about the pests and keeping them out. How do you keep critters from destroying your garden? I have a fence around my big garden. And lately, squirrels/chipmunks have been going to town on my flowers at home. So I have little screens and pieces of chicken wire to keep them out. Because they will literally destroy and eat or chew up everything. And as you know, if you listen to the show, I'm not a fan of squirrels, rabbits, chipmunks at all. If I don't see one of those things, I will not miss them. All right. I said I would do it. We're going to do it right here. My second 4-pack of Summerfest tickets, because I didn't do it yesterday. I forgot. Summerfest coming up next week, three straight weekends here in Milwaukee. World's largest music festival. I would say world's greatest music festival. A four-pack of tickets to caller number five. Caller number five to 855-616-1620. We'll win a four-pack of tickets to Summerfest. Caller number five, 855-616-1620. We'll win a four-pack of tickets to Summerfest. Call now. Be nice to producer Charlie. Welcome back to the show on this Wednesday. Happy Hump Day, everybody. Happy Flag Day. Get those flags out. Come on, no excuses. If you don't have them out, put them out when you get home from work or play or whatever. We're doing Ask Steve Anything. Don't forget early out for the Brewers game right around the bottom of the hour. We'll get to that. James joins us on the south side. Question for Ask Steve Anything. James, go ahead.
Yeah, in Oak Creek there, can you have a miniature hobby farm? You got the vegetables and stuff and flowers and everything else that you grow on your property there. I don't know how big a piece of property is, but would you consider it a miniature hobby farm?
Nice question, James. On my home site, which is not where my big garden is, no. Now, you have to have the right size space, lot size, and have the ability to do that in certain areas. You can't. But if I have the space, now, I've told this story before. I have my big garden on one of my neighbors, Brian's, property, who has graciously allowed me to farm there for, I'm guessing, about 25 years. And this is the final year the property is developing, and he's going to build a home on it. And I'll miss that. And I've already started to do some of the cleanup because you collect a lot of things over the years, and I certainly have done that. So I've started that process already, and the garden looks great. Things are growing, probably tripled in size since I planted them about 2 weeks ago from Monday, I think. So, I mean, that's on their way. I love the idea of a hobby farm, but it can't be where I live because I only live on a third acre. But I love the idea of doing that. And although my wife would say, really, hobby farm? No. Let's see. From the 414, if you're familiar with the mailboat on Lake Geneva, I am. I just saw a story on this last night. Then why don't the residents put their mailboxes close to the end of the pier so the runners don't have to kill themselves? It's a fair question. Because they get 30 seconds or something? And you could snap an ankle. And it is a young person's job because you get somebody a little bit older, they're going to snap an ankle, break a hip on that. And it's not easy. How Lake Geneva decides to do things is up to Lake Geneva. Local control. Steve, if all the world's governments were to play musical chairs, which country's government would you hope lands in America's chair? That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. So is the idea here that the winner would be the government that controls everybody else? Is that the idea of your question? Text her from the 262. Give me a little more detail, and then I'll answer it. Ask Steve Anything. If you were given 10 minutes with any president, dead or alive, who would you choose? What would you talk about? Love the show. Jen from Waukesha. Thank you, Jen, for that. George Washington. Second would be Abraham Lincoln. I'm fascinated by the Washington story. I visited Mount Vernon. I had a great behind-the-scenes tour about a month ago. Absolutely loved everything about it. Fascinated by someone that created the template for being a president. Rejected the idea that we should have a dictator in this country. Even though he could have easily been picked as a dictator. And most Americans would say, yes, that's the guy. Let him be a dictator. He said, no, that's not. We want representative government. And he exemplified a lot of the things that I hope I do. Honor. Trust. Appreciation for the earth. Grew things. Innovative. And Abraham Lincoln, the obvious stuff, right? Bold decision-making, being a leader when you knew that your decisions were unpopular with a heck of a lot of people, and yet you did it anyway. You went forward anyway. You made that commitment to the truth, the ultimate truth, that people are equal. There's no difference based on color. That's big stuff. That's real leadership. Bob from Waukesha joins the conversation. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good on this Wednesday. What do you think? What's your question?
Hey, my question is two parts, Steve. Isn't pretty much the structure of your program providing your opinion? And the second part is, don't you always ask for opposing opinions?
Yes. I welcome them because I think it's a better conversation.
Okay, and, I hope someone else is listening.
Yeah, well, you and I both know that there's tons of radio shows, both here and network talkers and podcasters, who are only interested in presenting one side. I think it's lazy, unintellectual, and it does a disservice. The only thing interesting about a conversation to me is when you're challenged, when you're exposed to different viewpoints, when you get different thoughts and ideas. Because as a former private sector employee and a manager, as a former elected leader of a community, Oak Creek, the best decisions I made were one where I gathered input, some of which I disagreed with initially, by the way. You know, I get a lot of credit for Drexel Town Square. I disagreed with how that was going to be laid out originally. I came to my senses and it worked out.
Steve, I think you're absolutely correct, and I don't always agree with you, but you always, always provide time for those who have opposing opinions.
I appreciate the kind words, Bob. And Bob, if you don't know, Bob's a loyal listener and fan of WTMJ throughout the day. We'll get a couple more in before we squeeze in the last break, second to last break. Steve, why does so much talk radio these days do away with calls from listeners? Fortunately, WTMJ doesn't follow this new style, but why do so many stations that host do? I hope that that's old-fashioned, that way of thinking. I know that it happens because I sample a lot of local and other radio programs. There's far too much of it. And I've gone through phases where I've talked more and taken less calls. I like a nice balance. And, you know, Bob was just talking about differences of the show. One of the differences in the show is I bring in a lot of different voices. Chris Reeder today. Governor Evers. They're on opposite sides, in the case of Chris's subject today, the tax policy in the state. Governor Evers, last I can tell, is not going to support a zero state income tax. And Chris is obviously advocating on behalf of IRG for that very thing. But how do we as a country, as a culture, as a society, as taxpayers, constituents, regular folks, understand issues if we don't hear the other side? And this is what has led, my opinion, to the absence of intelligent, honest, civil conversation. That's the problem, in my opinion. Doesn't mean that those other kinds of shows aren't popular. They are. Doesn't mean people that do that for a living aren't going to make a lot of money. They are making a lot of money. I just don't like that trend, and I haven't liked it for a long time. So when I was asked to do a show 6.5 years ago, roughly, on WTMJ, that was my idea from day one, for the most part. Whether I was allowed to do that, that's a different question for a different day. I am now, and I celebrate it. And to me, in my mind, that's a good thing. A couple real quick ones before I get to break. Will Trump be convicted and sentenced? I believe on one of these states or state or federal charges, he will be convicted and sentenced. Whether a pardon is implemented, we'll see. When money is tight, why does our federal government threaten vets and Social Security while we give billions in aid to our enemies? How we spend money in the states and in the government, federal government, must be looked at. That's real debate. This nonsense where as soon as you mention Social Security, everybody goes, don't touch my Social Security. That's dishonest. And we'll get ourselves in a heap of trouble in the next 10 years if we don't start having those conversations. As I said, Brewers baseball coming up, and after the break here, one last final question I asked Steve anything before I give you a rundown on tomorrow's program for me. Why were you initially opposed to Drexel Town Square? I love the fact that Christine from Oak Creek asked this question because that's important. She listened. Here was my rationale for my early, less than favorable response to moving our city hall and library to the new site. I love tradition, and I know the buildings were outdated and all, but I also understood that the price tag of moving it was going to be pretty expensive. Now, I later changed my mind on that, and I've been given credit for a lot of things that happened in Oak Creek that I don't deserve, but it was a group decision that I initially was against that I later accepted, and I think it's the right call. And the uniqueness of Drexel Town Square, not to get too deep into the politics of Oak Creek, the uniqueness of that is it created a downtown where none existed before. It took over a site, I think 65 acres roughly, that was the site of AC Delco, Delphi, that was an abandoned building. We got that taken down for essentially not much and replaced it with this thriving centerpiece of a thriving city. There was a point at the end of my tenure when Oak Creek, I think, was the third fastest growing city in Wisconsin. So that was the reason. Changing mind is not a bad idea if you change it for the better. Looking up tomorrow's show, Sandy Max is going to join us early in the show talking about her WTMJ Cares initiative. Marquette and their president, Mike Lovell, will join us with a special guest talking about finance, credits, the economy, challenges for the individual, and, of course, by always popular at 11 o'clock, That's What Steve Said. Five questions that could change your life thanks to the Mind Chef restaurant. And if you haven't been to Mind Chef restaurants, amazing local restaurant downtown Hartford, also an Oshkosh location. And what we do is we give you five questions, three answers for each. You pick the right answer. No one has ever gotten all five correct. Best is four. Been done a number of times. Somebody last week did four, I think. That's coming up. Mind Chef restaurant. Check them out. They also have an Oshkosh location on Highway 41. And the cool thing about the Mind Chef, every Thursday, which is why we do this on Thursday, buy one pizza, get one free.